Democratic presidential candidates slug it out in their debate in Las Vegas.
This was a wild debate. Everybody had their knives out. They were going after each other. And it was suddenly like they all came to the party and really didn't want to leave.
And coronavirus worries failed to stop the markets from setting new records.
They're more confident than the current numbers say they should be.
It's Thursday, February 20th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. President Trump is expected to name Richard Grenell, the current U.S. ambassador to Germany, as his next acting director of national intelligence. According to people familiar with the matter, Grenell would succeed the current acting DNI director, Joseph McGuire, whose temporary term expires in March. Grenell is viewed as an ardent loyalist to Mr. Trump. Democrats are likely to show sharp opposition if the White House attempted to push through his confirmation. French authorities are digging deeper into spending at carmaker Renault while Carlos Ghosn was chief executive. Their investigation includes a lavish black tie event that Ghosn hosted at the Palace of Versailles and millions of dollars paid to an auto dealer in Oman. Prosecutors say they had enough to refer their probe to a team of investigation magistrates. They would then be able to summon Ghosn for questioning from overseas. Ghosn is already wanted by authorities in Japan. Prosecutors there charged him with misappropriating money from Nissan, which is in an automaking alliance with Renault, and hiding compensation. Ghosn has denied those claims. Nissan ousted Ghosn as its chairman in November 2018, days after Japanese authorities arrested him at a Tokyo airport. Last December, Mr. Ghosn fled Japan in a covert operation. More consumers are cutting the pay TV cord. Large cable and satellite companies lost about 5.5 million traditional pay TV customers in 2019, 2 million more than the year before, as consumers are gravitating to less expensive streaming options. But that doesn't mean cable is going to get cheaper. In fact, cable giant Comcast says the average cable bill will increase by 3% this coming year. The silver lining for cable companies? They say they're signing up more broadband subscribers who have a stronger positive impact on financial margins. Hundreds of U.S. companies plan to give employees time off to vote in this year's presidential election. It's part of a business-led push to improve the nation's traditionally low voter turnout. Nearly 400 companies, including JPMorgan Chase, Target, Best Buy, and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, have signed on to the Time to Vote initiative. Organizers said their aim is to enlist 1,000 companies by November, twice as many as participated in the 2018 midterm elections. Some states require employers to give workers time to vote if they request it, but many companies are taking additional steps. A number plan to grant paid time off, while some businesses, like outdoor clothing company Patagonia, said they might close stores and offices on Election Day. Las Vegas is known for its boxing matches, but the fight on Wednesday night was quite a show. There were six Democratic presidential candidates in the ring in Sin City, and no one was pulling any punches. Senators Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and Amy Klobuchar, former mayors Pete Buttigieg and Michael Bloomberg, and former Vice President Joe Biden duked it out in a debate that comes just ahead of Nevada's caucuses this Saturday.
Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another.
Mike Bloomberg owns more wealth than the bottom 125 million Americans. That's wrong. That's immoral.
And if he goes and is the candidate, we will have Donald Trump for another 4 years, and we can't stand that.
We shouldn't have to choose between one candidate who wants to burn this party down and another candidate who wants to buy this party out.
Our reporter Emily Glazer was ringside in Las Vegas watching it all. Emily, first of all, it didn't seem like the candidates were holding anything back in the debate Wednesday night.
This was a wild debate. Everybody had their knives out. They were going after each other. And it was suddenly like they all came to the party and really didn't want to leave. We especially saw a lot of both big battles and side battles. There were actual shock and, you know, couldn't believe it in the media center where we were in on Las Vegas on the Strip when Elizabeth Warren went after everybody over their healthcare policies.
Mayor Buttigieg really has a slogan that was thought up by his consultants to paper over a thin version of a plan that would leave millions of people unable to afford their health care. It's not a plan, it's a PowerPoint. And Amy's plan is even less. It's like a post-it note, insert plan here.
So she was going after everybody hard because she is desperate to make a major comeback in this race after not performing as well in the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary.
So Warren was hitting hard on health care, but there were a number of other side battles, right?
Absolutely. There was really not a moment when they weren't fighting, to believe it or not. So we've got most of them going after former New York City mayor and billionaire Michael Bloomberg on all angles, on all cylinders, ranging from his money and his wealth to his past policies. There was also the Buttigieg versus Sanders battle.
I am certainly prepared to get a physical, put out the results. I think everybody here should be willing to do the same. But I'm actually less concerned about the lack of transparency on Sanders' personal health than I am about the lack of transparency on how to pay for his health care plan, since he said that it's impossible to even know how much it's going to cost.
These are the two top candidates coming out of Iowa and New Hampshire, and they were really going after each other, whether it was their policy proposals or their versions of leadership. We've got Klobuchar versus Buttigieg, the experienced government official in Klobuchar.
And you know what? You have not been in the arena doing that work. You've memorized a bunch of talking points and a bunch of things.
Versus the new kid on the block in Buttigieg.
You know, maybe leading a diverse city that was facing ruin doesn't sound like the arena to you. I'm used to senators telling mayors that senators are more important than mayors, but this is the arena too. You don't have to be in Washington to matter.
So any way you see it, there were really people attacking each other all over the place.
Yeah, you mentioned Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He really was under attack. How did he do?
He didn't do so well. He was attacked from all sides. People are really worried about him. He's moving up in the polls. He has spent about $400 million on television and digital advertising, and he's really focusing on Super Tuesday states, not the early nominating states, not Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. And I think that the Democrats are seeing him as a real threat.
There was a very heated exchange between Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren about non-disclosure agreements.
He has gotten some number of women, dozens, who knows, to sign non-disclosure agreements, both for sexual harassment and for gender discrimination in the workplace. So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
So what basically happened is that there were former employees from the Bloomberg company that signed NDAs, and Elizabeth Warren and others really pressed Bloomberg to open up and expose what were in these secretive non-disclosure agreements, but he refused to do it.
I said we're not going to get to end these agreements because they were made consensually, and they have every right to expect that they will stay private.
One thing he said was they didn't like the joke I told, and he wouldn't say how many people had signed NDAs and really refused to budge. So that was a big back and forth between Elizabeth Warren and Mike Bloomberg on that stage.
That was connected to his position as a manager. But Bloomberg also got hit hard about his time as mayor. For example, the NYPD stop and frisk policy that was determined to be indirect racial profiling.
This was something that's really important that continues coming up in terms of Bloomberg's record. And the question was whether his policy when he was New York City mayor years ago really impacted Black and Latinos and what that means for those very important voter blocs in the 2020 election. And Bloomberg responded by apologizing, and he did say that it got out of control, but he also said that there were 650 murders a year in New York City, and he was trying to lower that, and in the end it did, but admitted that it was obviously a broken system.
One key area of contention was between Sanders and Bloomberg, and it was like a civics lesson, capitalism versus socialism.
This one was really interesting. I thought Buttigieg actually put it well.
We could wake up 2 weeks from today, the day after Super Tuesday, and the only candidates left standing will be Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg, the two most polarizing figures on this stage.
And most Americans. So these are completely opposite perspectives. One thing that Bloomberg did say and made a point that he's the only person on that stage who started a business and talked about, you know, what it takes to get people to start a business and help boost the economy. And when there was a question over whether capitalism is right or wrong, he said it's ridiculous.
We're not going to throw out capitalism. We tried that. Other countries tried that. It was called communism and it just didn't work.
Bernie Sanders later said was a cheap shot against him. Sanders, on the other hand, has said that Bloomberg's wealth is grotesque and immoral.
We are living in many ways in a socialist society right now. Problem is, as Dr. Martin Luther King reminded us, we have socialism for the very rich, rugged individualism for the poor.
So there's just such a really, you know, huge separation between what the two of them think. And you've got other candidates, more moderate, like Pete Buttigieg, Joe Biden, Amy Klobuchar in the middle.
So after the debate Wednesday night, who has the momentum going into the Nevada caucus on Saturday?
I was going to say that Donald Trump really had the most momentum after the debate. They were really going after each other, like, you know, the whole time. And there was a lot of division, even though toward the end of the debate, the candidates tried to make it about unity and beating Donald Trump. But I would say Trump, if anything, probably won this debate, given all of the fighting going on. And Warren was definitely the most aggressive.
Wall Street Journal reporter Emily Glazer, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
On to markets. Both the NASDAQ and S&P 500 finished at record highs on Wednesday after the Chinese government announced fresh measures to support the supply chains of businesses affected by the coronavirus epidemic. The outbreak has been weighing on global stocks for the past month. But Wall Street Journal reporter Paul Venia says U.S. investors have been bullish despite a weak round of corporate earnings.
They're more confident than the current numbers say they should be. Profit growth in the last quarter was not good. Profit growth in the current quarter is not very good. But a lot of people are ascribing that to effects of the coronavirus, effects of the China-U.S. trade war. They're looking at earnings growth right now, and they're seeing it down a little bit. But they expect, as those other factors recede, that earnings growth is going to pick up in the back half of the year. So the expectations are things are going to get better. The coronavirus, as bad as it is, no one's discounting it as a real human health problem. What they are saying is that the effect of it on the economy is going to be temporary. And when that comes off, you're going to see earnings growth go back up.
And here's what else is coming up on Thursday. President Trump's longtime confidant, Roger Stone, will be sentenced in federal court today. Earlier this week, the judge hearing the case denied a request to delay sentencing pending a request for a new trial. Stone was found guilty in November of lying to a House committee and obstructing its investigation into Russia's meddling in the 2016 presidential election. He was also convicted of threatening a potential congressional witness. Stone's case was notable for the rift it created between President Trump and Attorney General William Barr. And Victoria's Secret is about to go private. We report that L Brands is near a deal to sell control of Victoria's Secret to the private equity firm Sycamore Partners in a transaction that values the lingerie brand at about $1.1 billion, according to people familiar with the matter. The deal could come as soon as today. Sycamore Partners is expected to take the struggling business private. The $1.1 billion valuation would mark a sharp fall for a business that operates hundreds of stores, boosted supermodels like Tyra Banks and Gisele Bündchen, and generated about $7 billion in annual sales in its last fiscal year. Leslie Wexner, the embattled billionaire who has run the retail company for more than 50 years, would step down from his roles as CEO and chairman, but is expected to remain on the L Brands board and retain stakes in both companies. And finally, some Fidelity investment customers faced a nightmare scenario on Wednesday. When they logged into the company's website, their account showed up with no balance, or in some cases, they had no account at all. Throughout the day, Fidelity fielded complaints on Twitter from users who said they couldn't see their retirement accounts, investment, or checking accounts. The glitch led to tweets like, "My account showing zero balance. I thought I had more than that." The company said some clients were experiencing intermittent technical issues and that they had been resolved. And that's What's News for Thursday morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.